It's religion today, it's ideology today, and our secularist friends also have a faith.
Some kind of Disneyland fantasy.
I know how this is going to get heard in the secular world.
Where the pseudo-Christian masks are off.
That's nonsense, ladies and gentlemen.
Apologetics isn't just about giving answers to other people's questions. It's also about learning to question other people's answers or even question the question itself.
In a Christian worldview,
you may notice a somewhat deepening in my voice this week, and that is because I'm suffering from that dread disease, man flu. Which, to all you women out there, is a real thing. It really does exist. Anyway, please do remember our producer this week, Peter, who's in hospital, so thanks to Al for taking over. And let's begin with the children.
I believe the children are our future. Thank you. Teach them well and let them lead the way.
Teach them well and let them lead the way. Show them all the beauty they possess inside. Give them a sense of pride to make it easier. Well, we're telling the children that they are our future. And children were, inverted commas, spontaneously on the march this past week.
Tell me what democracy looks like!
This is what democracy looks like!
Thousands of pupils have come to Parliament Square today as part of Britain's first youth strike for climate. Inspired by the Swedish teenager Greta Thunberg, who...
There was a school strike in the United Kingdom from some children, such as there has been in Germany, where, according to Angela Merkel, it's the fault of the Russians, in Australia, and in other Western countries, such is the power of social media. What was this about? It was about, of course, the children protesting against climate change. Now, there are so many things that could be said. One, you could immediately mock and just say, well, let them give up their iPhone batteries, let them give up their transport and all the rest of it. And I think that's slightly unfair. I think it's good for children, young people, to be actively involved. However, there is a problem, and the problem is this. I don't think this is children rebelling. I think this is children conforming. This is children being led by their teachers and by the politicians, so that Nicola Sturgeon and others commended them for this. But I have one simple question on that. What if children were to go on strike, let's say, to protest against the slaughter of children in the womb, against abortion? What if children were to go on strike, let's say, in support of Brexit? These would be rebellious acts in our culture, and I wonder what Nicola Sturgeon and others would say about that. It seems to me as though child protest is fine as long as it's controlled by the adults. There is an enormous danger in using children as a mob. Remember Chairman Mao's Little Red Brigades? Well, is this what we've got now, the Little Green Brigades? I find this all a highly disturbing part of our culture. Now, as with this news item and with all the other things, we put links to articles on the website, and I would recommend that you go and look at some of the links that we put for this one as well. Now, I wonder if you've heard about decolonialization. Apparently that's what needs to happen in our universities. And there was a remarkable interview with John Humphreys on the Today program, where a woman who is chair of some decolonialization committee had a train wreck of an interview in which she was not really able to explain what it was. You can listen to part of it.
Do you know any, let's put it like this, do you know any academics, whether they're white or black or whatever they may be, who do not take racism and indeed slavery, because obviously that's an important subject on the curriculum, seriously?
Oh, there are plenty who don't, plenty who excise it from their syllabi or simply don't teach it because that's not in their habit and they've not reflected on it. I mean, we saw...
Really? Well, they'd have to be profoundly stupid not to reflect on it, wouldn't they? I mean, surely that has nothing to do with colour. That has to do with stupidity. I mean, if somebody thinks slavery isn't important, that makes them thick apart from anything else, doesn't it?
Well, I wouldn't say that. I would say that we have grown up in a world which has taught us to think in certain kinds of ways. And what we're saying with the campaign is we need to open up that conversation, incorporate lots of different perspectives and points of view.
But the idea that we need to be taught that slavery was bad, Do you know anybody? It's a serious question, this. Do you know anybody in university, teaching in university or otherwise, who does not think that slavery is in and of itself, is and always has been, profoundly bad?
Well, there were lots of people within universities who are revered within the Western canon that thought that slavery was okay. John Locke, father of modern liberalism,
You're talking about a very, very long time ago when everything was different. I'm talking to you about today.
But John Locke is taught as the father of modern liberalism, as a modern enlightened thinker, and as somebody whose ideals to which we should aspire. And we're saying you need to look at all of the ways in which John Locke is imbricated in a system which, apart from anything else, benefited from slavery.
So should we no
However,
longer
the
teach
decolonizing
John Locke?
Conversation is not just about saying slavery is bad. That's a hugely reductive way of thinking about it. It's saying that when we open our ways up to different ways of thinking around the world, we actually benefit hugely intellectually from the diversity and the thoughtfulness that that brings. I mean, your last...
They say that they want different ways of thinking. But actually, that's not true. They want only one way of thinking. They want everyone to see things exactly the way they do and through the same lens they do. And you know what this is? This is itself colonialization. This is Western liberalism colonializing history, sociology, politics, science, absolutely everything, in every single country. And if you do not toe the line, you are out. You are absolutely out. If you're not woke enough, you're gone. Our universities are being taken over by one style of thinking. They are no longer universities, they are monoversities. I have a suspicion that our Western liberals don't really love Viktor Orban, and there may be good reasons for that. But I tell you, he's getting some things right.
Now the Prime Minister of Hungary, Viktor Orban, believes he has the answer. Over the next 11 years, he hopes to boost the country's fertility rate from 1.5 to 2.1, the level necessary to sustain a population.
Now, in most Western countries, and since we're talking about decolonialization and slavery, let me suggest this to you. In most Western countries, you know, white people, middle class people especially, don't like to do dirty work. So what we do is we don't import slaves, but we import what Marx would call wage slaves to do the dirty jobs cheaply. But Viktor Orban doesn't want that. He wants Hungarians to do their own dirty work, and therefore they need more of them. For a population to be sustainable, the birth rate needs to be 2.1. In Hungary, it's gone up from 1.23 to 1.49, but he wants to get it up back over there, and he has announced a series of measures to do that. Listen to some of these.
Young married couples will be offered $30,000 low-interest loans transformed into gifts if they have three children. An existing family housing subsidy program will be expanded. Substantial sums will be deducted from mortgage debts at the birth of each child. Women with four children will never have to pay income tax again. Large families will get $8,000 towards a bigger car. 21,000 new nursery places will be created. And grandparents will become eligible for maternity or paternity leave.
Well, Orban must be doing something right. So the number of marriages since he came to power has gone up from 35,000 to 50,000. The fertility rate has gone up, as we said already. And divorce and suicide and abortion have plunged. Do you think those things are connected? May he be onto something? Maybe in our cultures, if instead of importing cheap labour, if instead of destroying the family units, we encouraged, yes, as I've said on this many times before, encourage real immigration, but also encourage stable family life. There's a radical thought for you. And then in other news, in terms of the Pope, he has defrocked Cardinal McCarrick, who's the most senior Catholic clergyman to be defrocked for... child abuse. You've got to say that that's an excellent thing. But then the Pope has somewhat bizarrely made a pact with Islam, in which he makes the following statement.
Il pluralismo e le diversità di religione, di colore, di sesso,
The pluralism and the diversity of religions, color, sex, race, and language are willed by God in his wisdom through which he created human beings. Now, the key phrase there is diversity of religions. And he signed a pact with Islam saying that Islam is willed by God. Really? Oh, do you know, this current pope lacks the clarity and the theological acumen and the intelligence of his predecessor, Pope Benedict, who would never have made such a statement. The idea that Christianity or Catholicism is just one religion amongst many willed by God is again a product of Western liberalism and not a product of biblical Christianity. Nor does it have anything to do with Jesus Christ, who said, I am the way, the truth, and the life, not one of many diverse ways. And then, speaking of bishops, well, we've done the Scottish Episcopal Church and we've done the Catholic Pope. Let's go to the Archbishop of Canterbury, Justin Welby, who, you know, in some ways I kind of like. He comes across really well in so many ways, and there's so much potential there. He's an evangelical, apparently, who speaks in tongues. Well, sometimes I wish he'd speak more clearly about the gospel. So in an interview that he did with Unbelievable, with Justin Brearley, it was just so depressing to hear what he had to say. He was talking about transitional liturgy for those who are transgender, baptismal liturgy. And he kind of just weaseled round with his words.
What's going on is there was a General Synod resolution which said to the bishops, as bishops who are responsible for doctrine in the church, I mean, as bishops are, it's not just an Anglican thing, that goes back to the beginning of the church's history. Please provide a liturgy for people who've gone through transition as transgender people. And the bishops looked at that, sent it off to what we call the liturgical commission. They looked at it and came back and said, we don't need one. Mm-hmm. Don't need a special liturgy. What we need, we'll give some guidance. It's not binding, people can take it or leave it. This is not an instruction.
Right.
And there is no change of doctrine.
I see.
It is simply saying, if you want to use the structure of the baptismal liturgy to mark a transition in someone's life, not as a new baptism, let's be clear, because you're only baptized once, but not as a new baptism, but as a way of people saying, affirming their identity in Christ. In the same way as if someone who's been baptized finds faith in Christ in a new way. Sometimes they will have an affirmation of their baptism, reaffirmation of their baptismal vows, which, you know, will look quite like a baptism, will say the baptism promises, but it's a way of saying, this is who I am. And it's guidance, it's not a rule. People are free to ignore it, and it's not a change in doctrine in any way at all.
Well, I'm sorry, Justin, but you are changing doctrine. You're saying you're accepting transgender to the extent that you're equating it with someone becoming a Christian. And that is, it's appalling. I don't know, the church just so seems to have lost its voice, much as I seem to be losing mine physically, but they are losing their voice. I don't even know how to say it. They're losing the courage, they are losing the ability to apply the scripture to contemporary life, and they just get blown along with every wind of doctrine and with every cultural trend that gets pushed our direction. We have to find some way to say we're going to go along with it. No, you should say enough, we're not, that's done. And speaking of cultural transitions, let's go to France. I mean, how's your French? French for mother, mama. For father, papa. It's fairly easy. Well, don't worry, you don't have to learn any of that anymore, because instead you are going to need to have parent une and parent deux, because Monsieur Macron and his government has proposed that in France you no longer have mothers and fathers, you have parent one and parent two. Well, in Britain, we're now proposing as well that we have the first baby who doesn't have any mother. Yeah, you heard that one right. And how can we say that? Just stick with this. I realise it's going to mess with your head. But how can a child not have a mother? Well, there is a transgender man who is suing in the British Supreme Court to be called the child's mother. Now, this transgender man, that is someone who was born a man, who now says he's a woman, says he wants to be known as the child's mother, that legally on the birth certificate he should be the child mother. So this will actually be the first child in Britain without an actual mother in terms of a woman who's carried them in their womb and so on. But don't worry, that's all getting messed up too, because there are surgeons who are now talking about womb transplants for transgender men. Do you know what this is? This is the destruction of humanity, but in particular, it's the destruction of the female. And this transgender madness continues. Ian McWhirter in The Herald in Scotland got in enormous trouble for saying that, sarcastically commenting that cis women are just on the wrong side of history, that the Scottish government is now apparently going to say that women have to be referred to as cis women as opposed to trans women. Do you know, has this thought ever occurred to you? If a trans woman is literally a woman, then a woman is literally a trans woman. Just think about that one, ladies. No such thing as really as female anymore. And then we're finding again the destruction of women's sport.
40, love.
3 championship points for Miss Navratilova.
Now, Martina Navratilova has got in enormous trouble for saying that if you are born a man and you say that you are a woman and you compete in women's sport, that is cheating. And she's been removed. This is Martina Navratilova, the pioneer of LGBT, if you want to put it, but really the L part in women's sport. And she's been removed. She's been as patrons of various LGBT charities.
God, please.
Meanwhile, back in Britain, the clinic in the NHS, at a trans clinic in the NHS, are deeply concerned about the damage being done to children whose parents are bringing them. I spoke to a GP recently who said that they have parents who come in who want their children to be operated on, and she just refuses. And then these parents, and it's the parents who are pushing this more than the children, will then head off to a clinic in Glasgow or elsewhere and have this mutilation practiced on their children. It's the end of men and women. And again, just to keep you in the direction that we're going, I don't know if you've ever watched the programme called The Midwife, but they really are pushing out the boat as regards abortion.
But I suppose the unavoidable elephant in the room is, at this time in 64, illegal abortion was prevalent. I think it was one prison in London, one women's prison in London, there were 40 abortionists serving time just in Holloway at the time that this series of Call the Midwife was being made. So it was this was the tip of the iceberg, so it was a really huge social problem. Now, within a few years from the time this series is out, they bring in an act to make abortion legal. We are living in the days before...
So we're having this again, as we've already mentioned, abortion on demand up to giving birth in the United States. Well, there are people in the United Kingdom who want that as well. And this is promoted through soap operas such as Call the Midwife, who have given a couple of really sympathetic, really propaganda pieces on the necessity of abortion.
But if people haven't cottoned on to what we've been doing for 8 years, I don't know where they've been.
But that, even that wasn't enough for the abortion activists, who complained that the BBC, after their programme, did not have sufficient links to abortion providers. So they're wanting directly to link this soap opera to those who would provide abortions. We know where all this is going.
And through that lens, through those people, and through human kindness and love, you can actually go to some hard places and make it work.
Before we go, let's just have one or two bits of other news. I think that one of the problems is simply in the world is that there are not enough humanist celebrants. Nah, not really. But I saw an advert recently for humanist celebrants. If you want to become a humanist celebrant, it's a great way to make money. The Humanist Society will make money out of you. I think in order to train you, that it will cost you, I think, around £4,500. But then you can charge £300, £400, £500 a wedding. I guess you get to do funerals as well. It's a neat way to make money. Sadly, of course, there are some Christian clergymen who are like that. They think it's a way to make money. Well, it's not. We here generally provide our services for free. At least I do in my own church. I'm not going to charge people to bury them or to marry them. Maybe a bit of other news. I see that America is now set to become the largest oil producer in the world. If you combine Saudi Arabia and Russia, you would not have as much oil as America is producing. And this is largely because of West Texas and fracking. It really is quite extraordinary. An area that was in severe decline is now a boom area of the United States. And sticking with the United States, just another random piece of news, I think. Do you know that photograph of the sailor kissing the girl in Times Square in New York after the victory in Japan at the end of the Second World War? Well, the sailor's name was George Mendoza, and George Mendoza died this week, aged 95. It's kind of an iconic photograph, and it's the passing of an era, I think, in that many of the people now who fought in the Second World War, there are going to be very, very few of them who are left alive. And speaking of the Second World War, before we leave you...
Mit dem Angriff Steiners wird das alles in Ordnung kommen.
Mein Führer, Steiner konnte nicht genügend Kräfte für einen Angriff massieren. Der Angriff Steiner ist nicht erfolgt.
There's a wonderful film called Das Untergang, or Downfall, which starred Bruno Ganz as Hitler, who got into a lot of trouble because he portrayed Hitler as a human being who liked dogs and women and was a vegetarian. All of these things which were true.
Es bleiben im Raum Keitel, Jodl, Krebs und Burgdorf.
Well, of course, it became the film became famous because of a meme that was created out of it, which just went viral everywhere.
Das war ein Befehl! Der Angriff Steiners war ein Befehl! Wer sind Sie?
But I think it's actually a brilliant film, and I think it's well worth watching if you want to consider human nature and what is happening in our culture and society.
Jeder hat mich verlogen, sogar die SS. Die gesamte Generalität ist nichts weiter als ein Haufen niederträchtiger, treuloser Feiglinge.
Mein Führer, ich kann nicht zulassen, dass die Soldaten, die für Sie verbringen...
Die Feiglinge, Verräter, Versager.
Mein Führer, was Sie da sagen, ist ungeheuerlich.
Die Generalität ist das Geschmeiß des deutschen Volkes. Sie ist ohne Ehre.
Our quote of the week comes from the First World War book, or a book about the First World War, The Battle of the Somme, Into the Breach by Hugh Sebag Montefiore, which is just a brilliant book, although profoundly depressing as well. And it's a quote that I think affects the church. It seems that causing hundreds of casualties inadvertently was a less heinous crime than rocking the boat. That is commenting, that was a soldier commenting on those who questioned the orders that they were being given. Don't rock the boat. Don't rock the boat. If hundreds of people are going to be killed, doesn't matter. Just don't rock the boat. I think that's the attitude, sadly, of many Christians today. Don't rock the boat. Let's just keep in with the culture and the society. Well, as you've heard in this podcast, our society is going down the tubes. We need to speak out. We have a responsibility to speak out, not out of hatred, but out of love. Well, there were so many other subjects we could have looked at. We didn't mention Brexit. We didn't mention fake news and assaults in America. We didn't mention the new political grouping in the United Kingdom. I think many of us are just fed up of all this kind of stuff, but maybe we'll come back to it next week. Thank you for sending in news to us. Thank you to Peter Byram for the piece about Justin Welby. Thank you for drawing my attention to that. If you wish to draw our attention to other things, please feel free to do so. We can't promise we'll cover them all, but we'll have a go anyway at some of them. And if you want to support this podcast, then please do support it on the Podbean fundraiser and go to the website as well. May God bless you and hopefully see you next week.
We're part of a culture that really loves to hate us. Every chance they attempt to isolate and debate us. It's not that they don't like us, it's just they don't like God in us. It's common knowledge and oddly enough, but makes a lot of sense to a lot of us. We completely understand because we used to occupy the same space and lived in a similar type state until we tasted of God's grace. So we continue loving this world that so easily rejects us and passionately press past the lack of their cultural acceptance. And as if there weren't enough problems for us gaining influence, we keep fighting over the issue of what's too worldly of a Christian to make a difference. So no matter how you paint it or politically campaign it, whether you water it down and drain it, it's really all the same, ain't it? It's the same frustration, same constant segregation. Christians living like aliens trying to relate with citizens of a different nation. What always makes for a better presentation than bark and bite is a proper understanding of living life filled with salt and light. So we walk this fine line of walking in light of God's kindness and live with a sense of worldliness without the fear of compromising, loving God and neighbor until Christ comes to split the sky or die in this society, hailing Jesus as Messiah. Yep.